Welcome back. This is Tea and Table, the podcast that tends to be over by the time you've finally found your headphones, turned up the volume, and shifted your attention to the words coming out of the headphones. I actually just searched online whether there is a term for podcasts that put out really short episodes, but couldn't find anything. I think micro-podcast is pretty descriptive, so Tea and Table is now officially a micro-podcast. Anyway, I'm Annie, and this is episode number 11. It feels like I should have some kind of intro music here. I'll see if I find something. Anyway, one of the most common pieces of advice in game design is to simply play a lot of games yourself. This way, you'll get a good feeling for what's state of the art, and you slowly build up a personal library of game mechanics and experiences. I think I'm doing pretty well on that front. I just checked, and over the past year, according to my diligently maintained board game stats, I recorded 200 plays of 100 different board games, totaling almost 300 hours of playing, which means I spend roughly 3.3% of my total time playing board games. That is actually quite a lot, and I wonder if I should rather spend some of this time on my own games, but I guess you can never play too many board games. Plus, it doubles as socializing if you also talk to the people you play with, so that's good. However, as a designer, I think you can do a lot more than just play other games, and there can be a lot of value in doing some, even just minimal, post-processing. So this podcast is about something I started doing recently, post-processing the games I play. Now, what does that mean? In a nutshell, I try to formulate my thoughts about the game from a design standpoint, resulting in something you could call a low-effort critique. For this, I've come up with a set of questions that I use as prompts and for quick inspiration. Let's go over them. 1. What do I find satisfying about the game and why? 2. What three attributes would I ascribe to the game? 3. What's elegant about the design? 4. What's novel or innovative about the game? So this could be anything about the game, the theme, mechanics, interactions, components, artwork, how the game elicits emotions or creates memorable moments. Question 5. Does the game have a hook and what is it? So in the last episode, called Beyond Mechanics and Theme First Design, I talked about what I call hook first design. And in that context, I think it's super useful to identify hooks in other games. How do they spark your curiosity and make you want to come back to play again? Question 6. How is the on-ramping experience? So how easy is it to learn the game, given its actual gameplay complexity? What does the game do well, and where could it make on-ramping smoother? I personally think that a smooth learning experience is often undervalued and could use more polish in many board games. This is especially important when trying to recruit new people into board gaming. A lot of hobby board gamers are quick to pick up new games due to their extensive experience, but not everyone is like that, and you can easily bounce off the entire hobby if learning games is too tedious or makes you feel stupid. Question 7. Are there any issues with the game's design, and if so, what are they? 8. How would I try to address these issues, if any? Issues are, of course, not perfectly objective, and finding potential solutions is obviously very hard, especially when you don't play a game multiple times. I actually very often see people immediately judge games after their first playthrough, proposing solutions that they deem obvious fixes to what they don't like. And while there are certainly some games with blatantly obvious problems, I think people tend to be too fast to jump to such conclusions most of the time, and it's always a good idea to ask yourself why the game's designer may not have taken that seemingly obvious path. Either way, I still think it can be good practice to try and identify potential problems and think of how you'd approach them. Question 9. What did I personally not like about the game? This is especially interesting to me personally since I have a very broad taste in board games. I'm typically initially drawn to games with great artwork and an art style I like, but I'll generally play and enjoy almost any type of game. Conversational party games, adventurous campaign games, heavy Euro games, lightweight family games, or epic 4X games. So identifying elements that I don't like is actually helpful for me in that it gives me some direction in my own design. Now, all of this probably sounds way more sophisticated than it really is. I really just use these questions as prompts and jot down a few notes on the games I play. In fact, I even added a question as I was writing this podcast episode. I might do this on the bus back home or taking a couple minutes on the weekend to take a note for each game I've played during the week. So here are a few examples of what I thought were interesting insights in games that I played recently. I played Now or Never by Ryan Lockhead, and it's an interesting example of a game that manages to evoke a sense of discovery and adventure in some of its mechanics, while still having a bunch of very puzzly, involved, and Eurogame-esque mechanics, which I thought was a neat accomplishment. Or as I played Obsession by Dan Heligan, I was baffled by how simple the core gameplay itself actually is, given that it made a fairly complicated impression as I was learning the rules. Thinking more about it, I think that's because the game has quite a lot of edge cases and intricate little rules and small extra mechanics. But they don't feel callously tacked on the contrary, they seem very intentional and purposeful, and reading some of the designer diaries online confirms that, but despite that, the game seemed much more complicated than it ended up being during actual play. So this then prompted me to think about the consequences of removing some of these extra rules and mechanics, and potential ways to mitigate those consequences. For example, the game has global special events that happen during some of the 16 rounds, as indicated on the main board that serves as a round tracker. Also, the game offers an extended play variant on the backside of this main board. So, perhaps removing the special events on the normal side of the track could be a way to make the on-ramping experience smoother and simplify the game in that variant. This might come at the cost of strategic depth and game balance, and it might not even work in general for some reason I don't see, but it's generally still interesting to think about. Finally, playing games online, for example on Board Game Arena, is a very neat way to try many different games easily and quickly, and the biggest overhead at this point is really just learning the rules. So, as always, feedback on the podcast is very welcome. You can find all my contacts in the show notes, and I'll talk to you next time.